Hello and welcome to Entrepreneurship Policy Pulse, a podcast by the Faith Institute of Faith Foundation. Our conversations would revolve around Nigeria's entrepreneurship ecosystem, touching on key thematic areas and preferring policy recommendations. This podcast would feature researchers, policy influencers, and stakeholders within Nigeria's entrepreneurship ecosystem. Hello everyone, welcome to Entrepreneurship Policy Pulse Episode 2. My name is Amaka Wokolo, I head the Faith Institute. Today we're going to be discussing the theme enabling youth-led businesses to thrive in Nigeria's food retail sector. And to do justice to this topic is no other than a very important personality I'm going to be introducing very shortly, but not without providing some context. Now, as part of efforts to expand our research and thought leadership around entrepreneurship in Nigeria, we launched the Faith Institute Fellows Program last year, and today I have one of our distinguished fellows in the studio with me. The Faith Institute Fellows Program is a two-year program designed to bring together policy experts, economists, and the academia to support the policy design, review, and implementation processes that would address gaps limiting the potential of Nigeria's entrepreneurship ecosystem. Now, part of the program is that our fellows develop white papers and policy briefs that address specific thematic areas within Nigeria's entrepreneurship ecosystem. Now, without further ado, join me as I welcome Dr. Ayodele Shitu. Dr. Ayodele, it's good to have you with us today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Amaka.
So would you like to introduce yourself so we can meet you?
Thank you, Amaka. I am Dr. Ayodele Shitu, an economist and a faculty member of the Faculty of Social Sciences, University of Lagos. I have a PhD in economics, and I specialize in the economics of entrepreneurship and innovation. Particularly, I am an enthusiast of youth entrepreneurship in informal settings.
Yeah.
I am also a member of the pioneering fellows of the Faith Institute.
Yes. Thank you very much, Dr. Shitu. And guess what? Today is a very important day because today is Inauguration Day in Nigeria. This is the day we essentially welcome a new government into office, and how crucial that is to, you know, the conversation we're having today and just even the entrepreneurship ecosystem at large, you know?
Yes, I sincerely agree with you, Amaka, given the fact that it's a new chapter entirely for the youth entrepreneurship ecosystem in Nigeria. You know, it's interesting to hear the government, I mean the president, talk about the youth during the build-up into this very inauguration, promising young people that he is not going to sleep, he's out to work for them,
right?
And he had made so much promises, and we hope that such promises will come to fruition.
Yes, so here is hoping that, you know, the new government and this new era really just ushers in positive change and reforms that we can see.
World, the positive change.
Exactly, within Nigeria's entrepreneurship ecosystem.
Not just positive change, positive changes that will enable youth-led businesses to thrive.
Absolutely. So we're going to deep dive and just jump right in into the topic. This topic, I think, is fascinating, and we would hear in a bit why you chose this topic. You chose to focus on youth-led businesses within Nigeria's food retail sector, which is an interesting space to delve into and to look at. So I think just to jump right off the bat, my question would be, you know, let's look at the food retail sector in Nigeria and talk about why you chose to focus on this specific area.
Yeah, the food retail sector in Nigeria is an important sector, just as the oil sector is important.
Okay.
But unfortunately, over the years, we tend to overlook it, given the fact that we believe that it does not have export earning potentials.
Okay.
But the dynamics is changing pretty fast, given the fact that we are beginning to appreciate food as a culture. We're beginning to see food as a unifying factor, not only just unifying people of different background and of different ethnicity
culture,
but evidences are also shown that food also has the potential to create export earnings for the country. So for me, it's a virgin space for us to delve into in terms of making our entrepreneurship ecosystem robust. And it's interesting, you know, the recent events, the food fest, the street food challenge, and more recently, the Guinness World Book of Record, you know, given that is attempted by Hilda Bassey. These are evidences to show that the food retail sector has innate potential to, you know, shoot Nigeria into the moon among great countries around the world. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Shitu. That was a great introduction. So moving on to my next question, let's look at the food retail sector again. And from your perspective, provide an overview. And so for our listeners, food retail, by food retail, we're also essentially just referring to street food, right? And I think it's, you know, you touched on a point around culture. And I think that street food actually is a good introduction to the culture of a community, right? So imagine that you have, and it's always very interesting when I go on Instagram, for example, and you have foreigners who are visiting Nigeria for the first time, and you see them on the street, they're trying to try our boli and fish, you know, or try boli and groundnuts, you know, and all of that, or akara, and, you know, and all of that, right? So I think it's an important part of our culture and even tourism, if which might be a totally different space, but it's linked. There's some linkage and correlation there, right? But from your perspective, what does the industry look like? So if you could just provide an overview of what the industry looks like, and then we can later look at some of the gaps that exist.
All right. Thank you very much, Amaka. The food retail sector can be broadly divided into two. We have the formal and the informal.
Okay.
Over time, we've paid attention to the formal sector, you know, the formal retail, food retail sector, because of its employment potential, its wealth generating potentials, its potentials towards contributing heavily towards tax revenue in the country. However, the informal sector, the informal retail food sector is often seen as how will I describe it, something of negative perception, given its negative impact on the society.
Can we break that down a bit more?
Yes, because when you look at the informal food, I mean the food informal retail sectors now, they occupy public spaces, they are often situated on the street. And when you look at it from the context of urbanization, we see it as something derogatory, something distorting the environment, hence,
or the city plan.
So, because of that, we see them as troublesome set of people to the society. But interestingly, the innovations that are coming up in this space and the fact that we have a lot of young people now seeking heaven in this sector makes it interesting, and the dynamics of the growth that we are beginning to witness in that sector makes it more compelling for us as enthusiasts of entrepreneurship to begin to delve into that sector, to see how young people are taking advantage of the opportunities inherent in that sector for wealth creation.
So just to build on that a bit, would you say from your perspective that we have more young people within the food retail sector, more young people as opposed to the older folks?
Interestingly, the population of young people in this space is growing by the day.
Okay.
And that reminds me, you know, it reminds me of one of the World Development Reports published by the World Bank as far back as 2012. In that report, the World Bank affirmed that within the next 10 years, if so much is not done policy-wise, that young people across Africa will seek heaven in the informal sector. And that's exactly what we are seeing now. 10 years down the lane, we see young people dominating the food retail space, especially within the informal settings.
Is that a good or a bad thing? Good thing, I think.
Good thing.
Yes.
Because it has enabled young people to find their creativity
and find a means of livelihood, you know,
and also demonstrating their tenacity, which is an important ingredient in entrepreneurship.
Amazing. Thank you very much, Dr. Shitu. So now let's talk about the impact of the food retail sector, right? On the entrepreneur, on the one hand, and on the community where they're located. You know, you sort of touched on it when you mentioned the fact that you find them along the streets. And so some people could argue that they constitute a menace. Other people, like who are, you know, in your school of thought, will say, no, that's entrepreneurship and they're, you know, it's an opportunity for them to thrive. But if you could just, from your perspective, share what the impact has been. And oh, by the way, we're actually speaking on this theme because Dr. Shitu put together a paper on this specific topic, and so that's why we're discussing the insights on this topic today. So if you could just share briefly.
Yeah, thank you very much, Amaka. And to be more very specific, there are diverse benefits that this set of young people have actually extended to their immediate community. However, three important ones are very germane to me as a young researcher looking into this. The first is the fact that their livelihood. This sector has enabled young people to seek legal and decent means of livelihood. And it's something that is very important to me, you know, in a society where young people wake up every day looking for opportunities, and yet this sector is actually offering them one.
And especially when we also talk about the youth unemployment rate. So this sector also provides, you know, an opportunity.
That's the second point I was going to mention, because it's also creating employment opportunities. You know, in the build up to us writing this paper, we had an interview with some of the good young entrepreneurs in this space. And it would interest you to know that none of them has employed less than five young other people, young people. So they have at least young five employees working with them. Not just only young people, they also employ the older ones too, who engage in the cooking and other delivery services. And the third benefit, I will call it, is the external benefit. Now, you know, ordinarily when you think of, okay, I'm starting a business, you think of the profit. But these businesses, as small as they are also giving birth to other businesses, especially in the logistics space. People ordering food within the confines of their home and wanting that food to be delivered right at their store doorsteps. So you realize that suddenly, since 2021 or after COVID-19, we've seen the emergence of logistic companies also, you know. That's a very good benefit.
Yeah, so I was going to touch on that, because one of the key points you raised or touched on in your paper was the impact of COVID-19 and how that really sort of gave rise or increased to an expansion of the retail, food retail sector. So do you want to speak on that a bit more and how COVID-19 played that positive impact,
if I can describe it that way? Was more or less a blessing for the stakeholders in the food retail sector, you know, and the young people, I would say, are a good beneficiary. You know, COVID, especially during the lockdown, you couldn't move. Mobility was an issue, but we had to eat. And it's very creative and interesting to see young people entering the kitchen, cooking, taking pictures. You know, young people are agile set of people. So lockdown was a big challenging for them, but they needed to just, you know, get themselves vibrant. And many of the stories I hear was people just trying new things out. Mm-hmm. And since everyone has access to smartphones, you take pictures, you put send around, and people keep on, what is this? An interesting one that happened within my own vicinity was a young one who started baking.
Okay.
And she baked during the COVID, and suddenly the landlady asked her, who is baking? And having ate the cake, the landlady also bought one, said, mm-hmm. please buy me one. Mm-hmm. And from there, that was how she also started her cake business. Mm-hmm. So we have several interesting stories like that. And I would say that COVID actually helped to unleash the cooking ability of several young people, but the few ones who were able to take the bold step, mm-hmm. converting this talent into business opportunities, are really thriving now, but they need more support.
Right. And so that's a very interesting story that you tell, because we see that replicated really across the entrepreneurship ecosystem. And to be honest, I think it's a testament to the tenacity, to the agility of Nigerian entrepreneurs. So despite COVID was a really dark time, but despite the challenges, it's great to see, and you know, as you just shared in that story, how a lot of young entrepreneurs were able to pivot or just find alternative sources but still stay engaged in entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
I think it's an amazing story and something that should be applauded. So just building on that and moving on, I think my next question would be to look at a certain aspect of your paper where you sort of emphasize that a lot of the businesses or entrepreneurs within the food retail sector are necessity driven, they're self-taught, you know, and a lot of them are motivated by a desire to survive. Which is not surprising, especially again when we consider the unemployment rate, and so people need to stay alive. And I know there are a lot of there's a lot of conversation around entrepreneurship being a path that people choose as against it being necessity driven, right? I think for me it's an interesting dynamic that we see. I don't know if one is better than the other. I think the question would be, how do we harness that and create an environment for entrepreneurs to thrive regardless of how they chose or how they found themselves on that path, right? But I wanted to just touch on that a bit and get your thoughts around how the food retail sector can grow, considering that, you know, a lot of them find themselves in that space out of necessity. So when you look to the future, what does that look like, you know, for the food retail sector? Do we see it becoming a bit more structured? A lot of them operate in the informal sector. Do we see them maybe getting registered, maybe getting NAFDAC and SON registration certifications? You know, do you see that happening?
Oh yes, I see that happening, Amaka. And I would want to build on the Global Entrepreneurship Monitor framework, which emphasizes that typical entrepreneurship ecosystem is a journey. It starts from necessity-driven entrepreneurship to opportunity-driven entrepreneurship. Then we move on to innovation-driven entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And gradually, when you look at what is happening in that space now, we are drifting from necessity-driven to opportunity-driven now.
Okay.
And that's why you see the likes of Ilda taking advantage of the opportunity in that space. And since we had that challenge, mm-hmm. you've seen several young chefs also coming up that, I think I can do better than Ilda does. Mm. And but apparently, when we started this research, we had an interview, mm-hmm. we had a focus group discussion, mm-hmm. we brought together young food entrepreneurs from four cities: Lagos, Calabar, Abuja, and Port Harcourt. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to know that majority of these young food entrepreneurs had never thought of it before, that they were going to be food entrepreneurs.
Okay.
So, but one, due to high rate of unemployment. Then two, we realized that the outcome from the focus group discussion also has it that some of them had employment, but they were not fulfilled with the kind of employment they had. So they just wanted something new. Mm. And as such, since I can cook, let me start. And that's why we said that we concluded that they were necessity driven, but we are gradually moving into the opportunity driven phase, and which I think is a good one for the country.
I think so too. So do you think that in the nearest future you would see a bit more structure in that space?
Yes.
In terms of formality now?
Oh, in terms of formality, I may not be too certain.
Because at the end of at the end of the day, if we want to see growth, right, there's going to be that need to take steps in terms of registering business, getting a, you know, a bank account, a business for the for a bank account for the business, and just being formal if we're going to see growth. So do you I understand and I hear you in terms of entrepreneurs starting out from the necessity phase, but from your perspective, do you think that this is something we would see in terms of a formal structure emerging?
There is certainly there's going to be a formal structure emerging, but not in totality.
Okay.
Just as I said, we're still going to have a lot of them still hanging on to the necessity-driven phase. But a few of them now who are having access to the right opportunities now are beginning to move into the opportunity phase. Just a few days ago, one of those whom we interviewed, I saw on his status, a WhatsApp status, suddenly transforming. It has a logo now, and it's already trying to build up a new brand for the business. So before we know what is happening now, obviously he's going to be moving into the scale up stage, and that means
and that's what we like to see. That's what we like to see.
If he can achieve that, and we see another many two more within that cohort doing that, I think others will be motivated to do the same thing.
The ripple effects would be great. Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Shitu. So we're going to quickly jump right into the challenges because we're almost out of time, and I've had a great time discussing this. But from your perspective, and you know, as you noted in the paper, you highlighted a couple of challenges that exist within, you know, within the space. Do you want to talk us through that and discuss that a bit before we jump into recommendations?
Oh, great, Amaka. You know, as rosy as the opportunity seems to be, it's interesting to know that there are still challenges, and five notable challenges that we discovered in the course of the research include funding opportunities, undependable logistics services, scarcity of manpower, complex registration procedure, etc. And you know, the first that struck me the most is access to financing. You know, yes, this is still a major issue.
It is.
And maybe that would, you know, inspire another level of research, you know, into how these young people in the food retail space, you know, have access to their startup capital, the operating funds, and possibly how they can fund growth in order to scale up. But it's kind of funny how the challenge around undependable logistics services was described. You know, one of the participants actually described many of these young guys, interestingly they're also young people, who are engaged in logistics services, turn out to be very funny. I had very funny stories where pick up your food to be delivered and you get to the middle of the road, and suddenly you open up to eat out of it even before it gets to the final destination. So that speaks to the fact that we need some level of professionalism in that space. And more touching, of course, is the fact that many of these young people are, you know, subjected to rigorous registration processes by NAFDAC. They applauded.
So this issue now is for those looking to go formal, correct?
Yes, for those looking to go formal, who have been able to develop some, how would I call it now? They've been able to discover some recipe for cooking, and they've been able to develop it into packaged product with the anticipation that it can be exported. You know, one of the interesting stories that we heard during the research is this jollof rice competition between Niger and Ghana. Mm-hmm. So one of the chefs has been able to develop a good recipe for cooking jollof rice, and he hopes that he can be exporting it to Ghana. But for him to achieve that, he needed that NAFDAC registration. But to get it, it was a big problem. Mm. So, and more taunting is the fact that they could not visit the NAFDAC website, but they could not get simplified information on how to navigate their way to securing these certifications as appropriate. So these are a few challenges that we were able to identify in the process, and we believe that if this can be solved, it would obviously enable youth-led businesses in food retail sector to thrive.
Within the sector. Okay, thank you. And so just to piggyback a bit on the oversight points you raised, I think you noted in your paper that NAFDAC has limited oversight over the food retail sector. Do you want to expatiate a bit more around that? And then maybe provide some suggestions on how they can come into the space to sort of regulate it, right? Because there's also that issue, and that's something that we need to, if you're dealing with food and dealing, because food is directly related to people's health. So if you're dealing with food and putting things out that people are consuming, NAFDAC needs to come in. But in a way, it's very unregulated. So how would you recommend that? Yes,
thank you, Amaka. Interestingly, I wouldn't want to blame NAFDAC as an institution, but over time, you know, food retailing in the informal space is often overlooked. NAFDAC goes out, perform oversight functions, but targeting just only the formal settings, the factories and the likes, but forgetting the fact that these young people or stakeholders in the informal food retail settings generally are also into food manufacturing. The only thing is that they are not using big machines, but they are using the cooking stoves, their pots, and mixing up the whole process. So if you look at it from end to end, it's also a form of manufacturing taking place. However, you know, because of multiplicity of functions and institutions, NAFDAC may say this is not our own purview. Right. It could be Ministry of Health and Co. But whichever ministry that is saddled with enforcement of safety should please begin to look into the informal food retail sector. Because we take in is more important.
It's very important. And so maybe they can also curb the issues around dispatch riders dipping into people's food, and then we can see less cases of that happening. So on a final note, we need to wrap up now. What are some of the specific recommendations you want to share to address the challenges you just discussed?
Thank you very much, Amaka. One important recommendation, we were able to come up with about five recommendations. One is the soft soup promotion of business formality. Yes, CAC has done very well by simplifying the process of business incorporation. But the fact that many of these young people see the informal sector as a heaven, limited taxation, limited harassment, and co, they would rather choose to stay back, even when they are growing in size and in terms of financial remuneration. So we need to think through innovative way of how to encourage these young people to formalize. Another area of recommendation is to promote the adoption of food safety behaviors and practices. This is very, very important, because what we are going to ingest into the body system has to be clean, has to be prepared under hygienic conditions, and more importantly, it has to be safe for consumption. So institutions, the Ministry of Health, NAFDAC officials, and any other government agencies that is concerned with the health and safety as well as security of the people needs to be on the lookout and evolve new ways of monitoring, evaluating, and as well putting these young people on the right path to preparation of good foods. And finally, I looked at capacity building initiatives.
Okay.
Many of the young food entrepreneurs that we have interviewed lamented seriously that manpower is an issue.
Okay.
And more so that they look forward to having this business grow in a sustainable manner.
Mm-hmm.
They have learned on the job also. They actually learned by doing. But they would love to see short courses that could put them through on the path of learning how to be better entrepreneurs, learning how to better manage people, learning how to be leaders within the food retail sector spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So these are interesting areas of knowledge gap that institutions can actually fill in order for us to continue to have a robust development in our entrepreneurship ecosystem.
Thank you. And if I could just add, I think that capacity building in the area of also financial literacy and just having knowledge of your books, because one of the major challenges they mentioned is access to finance. And what we find is that while there is maybe a demand, a supply shortage in terms of the types of finance products that exist and can, you know, service this type of audience or market, we find that on their own part, there's also that capacity building issue where a lot of young people need to pay attention and just be able to keep records, their financial records, because that way it puts you on a better pedestal to be able to access finance. So thank you very much. Thank you very much, Dr. Shito, for sharing that. And this has been Entrepreneurship Policy Pulse. I have been with Dr. Shito Ayodele, and we've been discussing enabling youth-led businesses to thrive in Nigeria's food retail sector. I hope you learned and had a good time as much as I did. Dr. Shito, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for hosting me, Amaka.
And that's all from our end. Bye for now, and
bye.
See you on episode 3.